With us right now, Congressman Ron Kind. You are out in Washington and cast a vote on Thursday that is tied to a supplemental nutrition assistance program. Is this part of the Farm Bill?
It is part of the Farm Bill, and unfortunately my Republican friends are having a difficult time passing a comprehensive Farm Bill this year. So part of their answer, which came in the form of this nutrition bill before us today, was calling for $40 billion worth of cuts with the nutrition programs, which unfortunately would adversely affect low-income children, individuals with disabilities, seniors that rely on these food nutrition programs. And there are better ways, Larry, of finding savings in the Farm Bill than going after the most vulnerable in our society. I've led the effort to eliminate these taxpayer subsidies that benefit a few but very large agribusiness. There are tens of billions of dollars worth of savings that we can do there without jeopardizing crucial support for family farmers. And yet, unfortunately, they're not willing to consider that right now. Instead, they go after, again, the most vulnerable, low-income kids, individuals with disabilities, and seniors. I think the priorities are all backwards here.
So as we look at this bill, H.R. 3102, and the cuts it proposed, this directly ties in to every person that carries what's called the SNAP card, doesn't it? And what types of things would have been cut?
Well, it does. It includes the amount of funding for the nutrition programs, the so-called food stamp programs every month. 12% of the population in our congressional district alone receives some form of nutrition assistance under this bill. And you cut it the way that they're proposing, and it's cutting into the bone. And this will definitely affect the ability of people to stay hunger-free in their lives. And one of their complaints has been that there's been a huge increase in the number of people enrolling in SNAP in recent years, but that is a direct result of the Great Recession that we're coming out of. The fact that people have lost their jobs, the fact that there are more children in poverty today. We're hoping that will change once the economy improves and good jobs are created. That's what we need to be focused on. What steps can we take working together to get this economy firing on all cylinders again? And then you will see those roles in the nutrition programs decline because of a healthier economy. But instead, you know, instead of focusing on that, they just want to cut these benefits and increase the level of hunger throughout our country when a lot of people are struggling right now to find the food that they need.
Now, you voted against this particular bill. What was the outcome? Did it pass or fail?
It did pass. It passed with all Republican votes. It doesn't have a chance of passing the Senate. They've already passed a comprehensive farm bill that does not call for these type of deep cuts in the nutrition programs, nor would the president, you know, sign such a farm bill if it came to them. So I think this may be an attempt for them to merely get a farm bill to conference, see if we can reconcile with what the Senate has already done, and see if it's still possible this fall of getting a five-year farm bill done. I hope we're able to find a way to do that. Our farmers need and deserve a five-year farm bill. They need to know what to expect and plan for over the next 5 years. It's been a very difficult growing season in Wisconsin this year, so I'm a big believer in risk management tools to help these farmers weather the tough times. But again, the priorities are all backwards coming out of the House when we could be doing more to tighten up these subsidy programs going to large agribusiness. Instead of doing that, they want to target low-income kids for deep cuts.
We talked before about farm bill things about a month or two back, and at that point you had mentioned that there's some kind of an effort to separate a lot of these food assistance programs from the general farm bill, and this clearly was one of them, but it does not have a chance of passing in the Senate. What do you think is going to happen with a farm bill, and do you think we'll even get one signed this year?
Well, again, I think with passage of this portion of the bill now, they can go to conference with the Senate. But what will come back eventually for final consideration is a farm bill that does include the nutrition title. Many of my Republican colleagues would just as soon get rid of the nutrition title entirely. But that too benefits, you know, family farmers with the food buy-up programs that we have in this country. And then it will be a question of whether or not the Speaker will allow that farm bill coming back to receive a fair vote on the floor. And if he does, my guess is it would require a majority of the Democrats to get this thing passed. because there would be less Republican support at that point. But you know, the point is, again, our farmers shouldn't be held hostage to this political dysfunction in Congress coming out of Washington. The last thing they should have to be worried about is where the votes are going to be, whether there's going to be another five-year farm bill. They're busy in the fields. It's harvest time. They've got to milk. And what I'm hearing is that they just expect us to get our act in order in Washington and the political warfare and the hyper-partisanship and start coming together again as Americans and start fixing the challenges that we face together as a country.
Did you see this bill pretty much go up on a party line vote, or was there some cross-party votes on this one?
No, there wasn't one Democrat that could support the $40 billion of cuts that they're calling for with these nutrition programs because of how unfairly that would be distributed. And, again, I think there's an opportunity to clean a lot of this up so that we do get a better farm bill, a farm bill that works for all Americans, for family farmers who need assistance, to those who are hungry in their lives and need a little bit of help so they get proper nutrition. I mean, we're talking about a generation of Americans, low-income kids, that if they're not getting proper nutrition, they're not going to get a proper education, and it's going to be hard for them to succeed in this global economy. So I think this is really an ill-conceived attempt in order to round up Tea Party votes for a farm bill by going after, again, the most vulnerable in our communities.
Do you think to accomplish the goal of both parties, cut the cost but still take care of those that need it the most, do you think it's going to be a conference committee bill that comes back, or do you think it's going to be a total rewrite and start over?
No, I think it's going to be mainly based on what the Senate's done. Now, the Senate has passed two bipartisan farm bills in this session and in the last session, with strong bipartisan support. So my guess is at the end of the day, it's going to look more like what the Senate has done rather than what the House is doing to hack up and separate and calling for this misplacement of priorities in the farm bill. Now, I'm still fighting. I still got amendments in regards to the subsidy program, the reforms there. Representative Petri in Wisconsin and I teamed up to offer some sensible crop insurance reforms. I mean, there's no reason why at a time when we're running big budget deficits, we should be guaranteeing private crop insurance companies a 14% profit. They bear very little risk under the crop insurance program, and we still pay their entire administrative and operating expenses. There's not a business in the world that wouldn't sign up for that sweet deal. So why are we doing that in the farm bill? It doesn't make any sense. And we would save over $11 billion over the next 10 years by the reforms that we're calling for. So I'd rather us consider that, tightening up the belt there, before we're going to these other areas, such as at seniors and low-income children.
So the big thing that people need to know right now is no change at this point, but keep an eye on Washington.
Yeah, I mean, right now we're still operating under the old Farm Bill program, but we've got other things on our plate. We've got a fiscal year that ends next week. We've got to find some way to reach agreement on the budget, or the government will shut down. Again, that would be another unforced error, a self-inflicted wound on this struggling economy when we can afford it least right now. And so there's a lot of high-stakes gambling, going on with a government shutdown, a lot of hostage taking place. And then after that, we follow with another debt ceiling debate and whether or not we choose to become a deadbeat nation, a country that refuses to pay our financial obligations from expenses that we've already incurred, mainly from Iraq and Afghanistan, and a new prescription drug bill that was passed a few years ago that was not paid for at all. So this is what's contributing to the debt that we have right now. And for those who supported those policies in the past, who refused to pay for them today, that's really what the debt ceiling debate is all about.
As we look ahead to the end of the fiscal year and the need to fund government operations, we know that the Republicans would love to shut off the funding on Obamacare. We've heard various sources tell us that they are willing to hold Obamacare hostage to get some numbers down. Do you see any possibility of splitting that into two topics, fund the rest of government, and then deal with Obamacare, or do you think it's all going to stay as one big package?
I really don't. I mean, first of all, defunding the health care reform bill is not going to happen in the Senate, nor would the president sign that again. And quite frankly, many of the Republican leaders think this is a foolish strategy to pursue. The fact is, health care reform is taking place. It's moving forward. Most of it is already implemented. What starts on October 1st is the ability for uninsured people, underinsured people, and small businesses to go into these exchanges and choose amongst competing health care plans. And then depending on their level of income, they'll probably qualify for some premium tax credits so they can better afford health care coverage in their lives. So when they do get sick or injured, those costs aren't passed on to everyone else. And in fact, corporate America has been participating in exactly the same thing for the last 2 years, these corporate exchanges, which, as I described it, applies the same thing in the private sector. And it's been working marvelously. I've met with many of the companies that have been participating. The employees like the choice. The companies subsidize the employees going into those exchanges. But, you know, these families have more control over their health care options by it. That's the same thing that's being set up now through these state-based exchanges. So come October 1, that's the beginning of the sign-up period. People can go to healthcare.gov, healthcare.gov. That's the portal into these state-based exchanges and make a decision that makes sense for their family and their finances. And then if they want a plan working for them on January 1st, they need to make a decision by December 15th so that everyone's ready to go. Otherwise, the sign-up period lasts until the end of March when people have a chance to go out and finally obtain some affordable health care coverage in their lives.
While we're on that topic, you'd recently stopped at UW Stevens Point on the health care bill to help people understand where to go and how to sign up and get information about the programs. Are there still more of those informational programs going on?
Yeah, there is. There are a lot of other organizations that are participating now. There are navigators that will help individuals as far as the choices in these exchanges. I was just trying to get the facts out, Larry. What I'm hearing from individuals and from businesses, they don't want to hear the political spin. They just want to know what's coming up, what, if anything, that they need to do to prepare for it. I think there's still a lot of misinformation, a lot of confusion people are grappling with. And little wonder. I mean, there's been an orchestrated campaign to spread a lot of lies and misinformation about what health care reform really means to people. So it's understandable that they are confused. But listen, if you're a senior, you're on Medicare, you don't have to do a thing. If you're already receiving employer-sponsored health care, that's not going to change. If you're a veteran getting VA health care benefits, that won't change either. Really what the exchanges are meant is to offer those who are uninsured, whether you're an individual, family, or a small business who can't afford health care coverage right now in the small group market, to go in there and choose amongst competing health care plans. And when companies compete against each other, and this is especially true with health insurance companies, it's usually the consumer that wins. And that's what these exchanges are meant to accomplish.
Anything you'd like to add today, Congressman?
No, that should do it. I mean, I'm afraid that the next couple of weeks may not be our democracy's finest hour. I think there's going to be a lot of exhaustion of a whole lot of alternatives before things that ultimately get accomplished. But I hope and pray that we're not dumb enough to either see the government shut down or to default on our financial obligations, because the economic consequences of that could be catastrophic, and it could make this great recession that we're coming out of right now look like a picnic in retrospect. So hopefully saner minds are going to prevail, and we're going to do the right thing for the American people, and Congress will get its act together here in the next couple of weeks.
Congressman Ron Kind joining us today. Thank you.
All right, Larry. Anytime.